of the things that impresses me about Japanese boat building is the way it's sort of stripped everything down to the minimum required. I find that, as a craftsperson, I find that really interesting. You know, that craftspeople, they had to work fast, they were fighting to survive, and so they made the process as easy and straightforward as possible.
You were just listening to Douglas Brooks, author, boat builder, educator from the U.S., who I was able to catch up with in Miyoshi, Hiroshima, Japan, as he works on a documentary project with filmmaker Chikara Motomura and master craftsman Tenkyo Hirofumi as they work on a traditional Japanese cormorant fishing boat.
And he's actually told us he's bought materials, he got a grant, and he's bought materials for three boats. So he's going to keep building, which is great. Wow. Yeah, it's great that there's that support here. Japanese boats are typically made of sugi, cedar. So, you know, yeah, he's got a lot of cedar. These are patterns for the customer boats, the yuransen. And when you do ukai, you as a customer ride a boat. You ride a spectator boat. In fact, those two men are the sendo-san for the spectator boats. So I think he's going to build a yuransen. He's going to build, yeah. And those are his, I mean, that's really interesting. That's basically his plans.
All the numbers.
So he has no plans.
Top secret.
Well, yeah, a lot of it is secret. Yeah. And he has no plans, which is very typical. He's got memorized dimensions. He has patterns. And that's it. Some boat builders do have drawings. But interestingly, they intentionally leave those drawings incomplete. That's so if it falls into somebody else's hands, they can't build a boat from it.
And does this master that you're learning from, does he speak to you? Or is silent?
Yeah. No. You know, oh, and here he is. Thank you, san. Sumimasen.
Konnichiwa. German Walsh des Hiroshima shi ni sunderu.
Hi.
よろしくお願いします。はい、ありがとうございます。
はい。Are you here for a while?
I'm here for a while. Yeah, so you want to work with them?
Absolutely.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. How long have you been at it?
Oh, today? When we started? Oh, we start at 8:30 or 9.
Oh, okay. And then you're ready for a lunch break? Or?
Yeah, I guess it's lunch break.
Yeah. So you've been here for a week?
Yeah. Yeah, and there are lots of techniques here that I've never seen before, which is like manna from heaven for me. You know, this is my 10th apprenticeship with a boat builder in Japan. And so, you know, I tried hard to kind of geographically cover as much of the country as I can. I've studied from Aomori in the far north to Okinawa in the south. In the early part of my research career, it was all sea boats. And it was only later that I finally studied with riverboat builders. And it's really quite different. The designs are quite different, the techniques are different, and the words are different. So if you look in the back of my book, Japanese Wooden Boat Building, I have a glossary. Because with every single one of my teachers, I had to learn new vocabulary. Yeah, not entirely, but you know, a significant amount. Mm. And that's been true here, but it's also been great. It's another riverboat. And Tenkyo-san uses some really interesting techniques I'd never seen before. So that's just, I can't ask for anything better than that.
He seems like a great teacher. And he has so much energy, and I love to see him smile. And
yeah,
he's had a variety of teachers,
variety of personalities, variety of teachers. But he's, you know, very austere. He's very serious about what we're doing. No compromises on the quality of the work, and you know that runs right across all my experiences in Japan. Just seriousness. That's what matters. That's what they're looking for. So. Yeah, I try to be the best apprentice I can be.
That's wonderful. So for the 2 weeks, you've made progress. And today, what I was just watching, can you just explain a little bit of what you were doing?
So we've put the two lower planks on. There'll be a final pair of planks that will be nearly vertical. But before we can put those on, we have to put these beams in. And they obviously hold those bottom planks at the proper angle, support them. And then next, probably this afternoon, we'll start working on from some of this material, getting our two final side planks. Then there'll be another beam at the top of the hull, a deck, which is actually the Usho seat at the stern, you know, maybe a rub rail around the boat. But yeah, yeah, we're close, I think.
Are you also working on the viewing boat?
No, I go. This? I'm just here for this. I go home in a couple of weeks. Yeah.
Are you going to be here for the boat launch at the end of the month?
Unfortunately, I can't. We are going to put this boat in the water, but they're going to have an official launching ceremony with the opening of Ukai season, which makes sense. And that's when they'll, and I'll, you know, I'll ask for photographs because my goal, Chikara-san will be putting together a documentary and I'll be writing a book, a how-to book on how these boats are built. Bit of the history and the culture around it, but primarily focused on recording these techniques. And with all my books, my goal is to write a manuscript that would allow a competent woodworker to replicate this boat. So I take it to that level of detail. And the other thing I do is I only record my teacher's dimensions. So in other words, I don't apply Western naval architecture rules. To me, every Japanese boat builder had their own system. And to me, that's as an important a piece of culture to preserve as anything else. And so when I do my Japanese boat drawings and things like that, I only use my teacher's dimensions. So for instance, in the design world, we needed cross-sectional dimensions to create the shape of the boat, to lay out the width of the bottom, the width of the sides, etc. So the angle of the sides. That all took place at these beam locations. So that's three locations. The transom also sets an angle, right? In Western boat building, that would be considered absolutely absurd. You would divide this boat up into 10, 12, 15 cross sections. And that's how I always worked in America, and it took that as second nature. But again, coming to Japan and seeing how Japanese boat builders do it, and seeing how they each had an individual, like sometimes an individual set of, I don't remember my English now, wari, proportions, I realized I've got to record that. And I don't need to apply Western naval architecture because with these three stations, we can build the boat. There's no more needed. And if you don't mind me droning on and on, one of the things that impresses me about Japanese boat building is the way it sort of stripped everything down to the minimum required. I find that, as a craftsperson, I find that really interesting. You know, that craftspeople, they had to work fast, they were fighting to survive, and so they made the process as easy and straightforward as possible. And I've seen some remarkable techniques, you know, toward that. So anyway, beat a dead horse. I try to record all that.
That's important. Yeah. And then you'll teach that on to your students. You'll document it in the books, the film.
So this substitutes for a drawing, right? Western naval architecture. He has these patterns. And this pattern fits here. This pattern fits up here and shows you the bevel.
So these as well over here, right? These are...
Yeah, those are for a different boat.
A different boat.
Mm. It's a pattern, yeah.
A pattern.
Yeah, I mean, if you make clothing, you know what a pattern is. It's the same thing, yeah. So...
And then what you were doing with him with the nails.
Yeah. So, yeah, fastening this, we sent a nail up through the outside plank, through the beam, twisted it, then bent the tip over and bent the whole shaft of the nail over to, and that tip grabbed the beam. That's called, in the Western world, that's called a clench nail. It clenches. And as I said, that's a very popular style of fastening in Asia. There's a lot of unusual fastenings like that in Asian boat building. Mm.
Is the first time you've done that stuff?
Yeah, yeah, like that. Yeah, that's crazy. But That's what I live for, you know.
And then talk about your hat, your souvenir.
Yeah, so I struggled for a long time. I probably was the worst gift giver that Japan has ever seen. I would bring over things like maple syrup and chamomile tea, and
they
I
like
present.
Maple syrup?
So imagine you sit down with someone in Japan and you say, you drain the maple tree and then you boil it, and here it is. Time and time again, the gifts I would bring would bomb. And finally, I hit upon this. I designed this hat, and that says Wasen, which means traditional Japanese boat.
Okay.
And everyone has been thrilled as when I came up with this gift. And so I made a new hat for Tenkyo-san and the Usho that I brought here, and it says Ukaibune, or cormorant fishing boat. So
that's very cool.
Yeah, I hit the jackpot. I finally figured it out. Yeah.
Fantastic. Still come so. For another few days?
Yeah. Well into this coming week, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yep. How much longer till you finish? Few days?
4 days?
Four days? Okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, good job.
Thank you.
You were just listening to Douglas Brooks. Now, he is an author, boat builder, educator. And I just had a chance to meet him in person, although he's been on my show, Seek Sustainable Japan, a few times, talking about his books and projects in Japan. He has a real passion for helping to preserve Japanese traditional crafts in terms of wooden boat building. I drove out to Mihara in Hiroshima, about 90 minutes drive from here. And I spent a few hours watching them doing this traditional boat building in rural Hiroshima. And it was really inspiring. Tenkyo-san is the last of the craftspeople who makes these special, unique cormorant fishing boats in this Hiroshima area. So I guess the big question is, does anyone care about the loss of traditional Japanese boats? So I spent a few hours watching these traditional boat builders, and it was so inspiring, not just because I'm passionate about sustainability, of course. I am not a carpenter. I'm not a craftsperson. I'm not an artist. But I really appreciate the passion of these people trying to preserve a beautiful aspect of Japanese culture and traditions and heritage before it is lost. And I think it adds value to our lives in Japan as well as travel in Japan. And it will be missed, and there will be an empty space if it is not preserved. Now, American boat builder, author, educator Douglas Brooks, and Japanese-American filmmaker Chikara Motomura are working on The Last Boat Builder, the title of this project, with craftsman Tenkyo Hirofumi in rural Hiroshima in an area called Miyoshi. Now, this last boat builder project aims to document building a traditional cormorant fishing boat with video, images, illustrations, and an explanatory book so that the designs and techniques of craftsman Tenkyo's techniques and style and design can be preserved. Now, Douglas wrote on the Last Boat Builder website, I have been invited by a Japanese boat builder, Mr. Tenkyo Hirofumi, the last builder of cormorant fishing boats in the Miyoshi Hiroshima region, to apprentice with him in February. He is building his final boat and familiar with my work documenting traditional Japanese boat building. He had asked me to work alongside him and document the process before he retires. This is literally the last chance to record a craft, the techniques and dimensions of which reside only in one man's memory. I'm being joined by a documentary filmmaker who wants to make a film about the project. We plan on producing drawings, a manuscript, and video documentation of how these boats are built to ensure the survival of this craft tradition. Now, above, Douglas had written that this was the last chance for work with Tenkyo-san before he retires. But as you heard earlier, Tenkyo-san has secured funding from Japan for making three more boats. So this will not be his last boat, and that's wonderful news. And perhaps the support from Douglas Brooks, when he comes from America, when they come from abroad with all this enthusiasm, with American donors and fundraising, maybe this outside influence is an important part of preserving Japanese traditions within Japan, because the outside view, the outside enthusiasm can have a very positive effect on preservation of these traditions within Japan, as people realize, oh, this is important for tourism, this is important for trade, this is important for us. Hopefully they come to that conclusion as well. Now, on my talk show, I've enjoyed chatting with Douglas Brooks three times over the last 2 years to discuss his various projects and his passion for traditional boat building. He's usually based in Vermont in America, where he teaches American students in a typical silent style of apprentice wooden boat building, like he was taught in Japan many times by the craftspeople that he worked with. Now, his work has helped build many traditional boats and document it across Japan, from Hokkaido to Okinawa over the past 20 years. And this year in Miyoshi, this project is his 10th apprenticeship. All of his teachers have been in their 70s and 80s, and he has been the first and often the only apprentice for many of these craftsmen before they retire. Douglas often describes his work in the nick of time documenting, and I jokingly told him that we need to clone him to enable more of these worthwhile projects in Japan. And he looked at me quite seriously and said, obviously, that it shouldn't be left to just him. The Japanese government really needs to fund apprentice schools and ways to get people involved to carry on these valuable traditions within Japan. For this project, Douglas joined by Chikara Motomura, Japanese-American filmmaker based in the San Francisco area in Northern California. And Chikara is documenting the sounds and images of the process while Douglas learns and documents the techniques as he works with Master Tenkyo in order to write a book. And both of them visually, audio, the film, and the books are a way to pass on these unique techniques to other craftspeople, not only in Japan for the future, so important, but any craftspeople around the world that want to replicate these styles. I really love Douglas's origin story as a boat builder and educator and carpenter. He first sought out wooden boats in Japan on his first visit as a backpacker. He was bored of the usual sights, and he found an interesting taraibune, tub boat maker on Sado Island in Niigata, and he became his apprentice eventually, and then was called back by the island locals years after, when the master craftsman who had taught Douglas suddenly died. And they realized that Douglas, living in America, was the only one who had ever learned the craft. And so he came back and he did the traditional apprentice style and taught locals. But this is unfortunately just an all too common story. And in the last 10 years, Japanese traditional craftspeople have been asking him to come and document their boat building craft before it's completely lost. But there is, in fact, only one Douglas Brooks, and we need to have hundreds of people like him documenting, learning, and passing on the knowledge to future generations of craftspeople. And Douglas's work seems to be the last chance, as we said. We need more funding. We need to set up schools, find ways to encourage craftspeople across Japan to get involved and use this as a career, or at least part-time of their career. Maybe they get some income from somewhere else, but how else are we going to pass on the legacy, the skills, and the culture to future generations? And of course, this is the same problem I hear from house builders who are doing traditional style Japanese houses, natural plasterers, roof thatchers, potters, bonsai craftspeople, and even farmers. As I watched Douglas at the project that I visited in Miyoshi, as I watch him on the ground, struggling with the low position of how to hit a metal nail through the bottom of the boat, a procedure only possible by lying on the cold concrete floor, he looked up and remarked to me that if he had done it in his studio, of course, he would have raised the boat much higher, maybe to shoulder height. But he perseveres to do it in Master Tenkyo's way. It's really impressive that Douglas has raised hundreds of thousands of dollars over the years to come to Japan many times to apprentice and document the craft. Often coming for a few weeks at a time to work with traditional boat builder who is about to retire, many of whom have never had an apprentice. So Douglas is too often the only one and the last apprentice. He diligently takes notes, makes sketches, takes photos, and documents the process diligently. There are so few books and documentation on Japanese boat building. Too much of the unique craft has already been lost, and that makes it even more special to witness the documentation firsthand, even for a day, to encourage this project, helping this style of boat to be replicated by builders everywhere and preserved for the future. As I was watching him, it was also really nice to see how excited Douglas was getting at different parts, learning different techniques. So, for example, when he learned the technique of how to twist the nail that he had pounded up from the top and pound it over and make a kind of clamp nail technique, and he was really happy to see that. And then he got me to come over to the side and take video and to see for myself when a unique style, like using the string to see the line that they should cut by Master Tenkyo. That was really interesting to see. And as I was driving into this area of Miyoshi and I exited the highway and I drove into the town, I always admire the rebuilt, renovated old traditional houses, which have new, elegant black or red kawara, Japanese traditional roof tiles on the houses. And it always strikes me that this is a very traditional cultural craft that has somehow managed to survive more than 1,000 years. And it is still being used. If someone renovates an old traditional house in the rural areas, I always see them using these tiles still, the traditional tiles. But quite often, also in the rural areas, these traditional tile Japanese houses are often fitted with solar PV panels on the roof. And the self-sufficient, sustainable energy, which is now more reasonably priced than the imported fossil fuel energy that the normal grid uses, and the prices go down. Fossil fuels will always go up because especially the yen is weak and it's imported. But it's just wonderful to see these old houses with that integrated balance of the traditional culture and the modern clean tech, more sustainable future, and how this is so beautifully and naturally in sync, and this kind of synergy between clean tech and traditional Japanese culture. And it just seems like such a great model that we should be able to replicate for some of the other traditional crafts. How can we find modern relevance for these traditional wooden boats, for example? Using them in tourism might be one example, which it has so much more value. When I was driving through this town, I was also a little bit worried about finding the Builders Workshop, but the Miyoshi DMO, which is the local tourism organization, they were inviting the public to come and watch the building, which led me to a nearby shrine. And along the way, I saw on the side of the road the huge logs piled in front of a makeshift workshop. And then I saw one of the staff, and they welcomed me in and told me where to park. And there was absolutely nothing glamorous about it. But when I did the uketsuke, or when I signed in, I also noticed the souvenir table. So a lot of people coming to visit, as is Japanese polite culture, they brought some souvenirs from where they came from. And it was interesting to see on this omiyage souvenir table, I was covered with mochi, canned coffees, beers, snacks, and even some of the tile-shaped senbei crackers, which are famous from the Five Arch Bridge sightseeing area of Kintaikyo in Iwakuni, which is about 90 minutes drive away. Now, like Miyoshi and Gifu, where Douglas had written his first book about making a cormorant fishing boat when he did an apprentice there, Kintaikyo also has this really long history, over 1,300 years, of ukai, which is cormorant fishing, and the related boat building craft. So in Kintaikyo, the boats alongside this Five Arch Bridge are really a key feature of sightseeing and tourism and local festivals. And tourists pay to watch the cormorant birds at work, catching the fish and bringing it back to the fishers. As in the book cover, you can also see Douglas's gift to the craftsman that he works with is a cap, a baseball cap. And in kanji, in characters, is written, embroidered on the front. It says, Ukaibune, cormorant fishing boat. And Douglas told me that after years of disappointing omiyage souvenirs to the masters from the U.S., he had tried maple syrup and sweets and all sorts of things, but he finally hit on a very popular souvenir when he brought the craftsmen he was working with this cap with the embroidered ukaibune, or a traditional Japanese boat, embroidered on the front. And when I was watching the Miyoshi boat building master Tenkyo-san, I was really charmed that he stuck a pencil straight up perpendicular on the side of his hat, his cap, straight down. And I thought that was nice to see and so cute, and it charmed me because it is the same way that the master Seiichi Nasu, who Douglas had worked with in Gifu, wore his pencil straight up into the cap, and that's on the cover of his book, The Cormorant Fishing Boat, A Japanese Craftsman's Methods. So it was really cute to see this one style feature, even in Gifu, even in Miyoshi, maybe in other areas of Japan, the boat builders just stick that pencil straight up and down on the side under their cap. Certainly traditional wooden boat building techniques are really important cultural arts that we want to preserve. But somehow, unlike the roof tiles that I saw coming into the town, they're not being thought of in Japan by government as anything we need in our modern lives. Douglas told me how frustrating it is to talk with Japanese government officers who really don't see the need to provide funding. And he says, who's interested or who needs Japanese traditional wooden boats? The idea is just modern boats, the fiberglass, the plastic boats, the machine-made is fine and efficient. But just being around these boats in this workshop really was a wonderful feeling. And there was so much cultural richness in the design and heritage, as well as, of course, so many stories of community, as well as showcasing such a great skill. I was just this year up in Tokyo as well for the Japan Travel Awards, and it was wonderful to see that one of the top applicants who got an award is an Okinawan boat builder, and he also does tours in the Sabani, typical indigenous Okinawan boats. And Douglas has had experience, of course, like most of the traditional boats around Japan, he's had experience with a craftsman there in Okinawa. And so for the Japan Travel Awards, it was Yoshida Sabani that was listed as a finalist. And of course, Douglas knew him, and he was really happy to hear that they had had some award. Now, Douglas had spent 3 months working with Mr. Shujin Rinmojo, who was an 81-year-old Sabani craftsman in Okinawa. And it is available on his website if you look at his website. And on the website, he says, one of the most distinctive features of the Sabani is the use of the wooden dovetail keys for the fastening, called hundu. And these are commonly used by furniture makers in the West, but the idea of fastening a boat with them really fascinated him. So he wrote about that on the website under the Sabani boat section. So he has, you know, he has published these books. You can buy the books, but he's also made available so much of his work for free on his website. So definitely check it out. I'll put the link below. And when I walked into the workshop, it was really nice. You can smell the wood. It's the cedar, the sugi wood that they're using, but also to see so many of the beautiful traditional tools that they still use. I did see them using both traditional and modern tools. So they did use a handsaw. They did put the wood through a planer to smooth out the wood. And it was really interesting to see how the different pieces of wood were so expertly pieced together with such a small team. Nothing was toxic in the wood shop, right? Everything came from nature, and one day we'll go back to nature. So there is that lovely aspect of sustainable business and sustainable craft as well. And I loved watching the efficiency of craftsman Tenkyo's technique. Very matter of fact, right? At one point, they were trying to set up the planer machine with a roller because the pieces of wood were so long. They needed something to steady it on the other side. And he just stood next to the planing machine, and he touched his leg where it was, and then he walked over. And that's how he measured where the roller height should be and adjusted it. And that was just, it charmed me because it was just so matter of fact and just make it work. You don't need to go and bother finding a measuring tape. It's just a very efficient, simple style. And so I think that in combination with the pencil at the side of the hat, as well as the more unique traditions like using string to mark the wood with a bit of paint inside. It almost looked like a fishing line that they would roll out and he would mark the wood with that. There's just so many really interesting little techniques that I was able to see. Definitely check out Douglas Brooks' website, and I will have the chance to also talk with filmmaker Chikara Motomura coming up next month once they finish this building project. And Douglas Brooks has said he is happy to come again on the show, very gracious of him, to give a step-by-step of this process that I saw only one part of, but how his experience was and his insights as the last apprentice, or one of the last as well, for this Miyoshi traditional cormorant fishing boat builder. As always, if you have any questions or comments, I'd love to hear from you. You can find me on social media, Inbound Ambassador, or JJ Walsh Japan, if you search that. Also, if you enjoyed listening to this, please share it with a friend that you think might be interested. And definitely like and subscribe if you could write a positive review on the platform that you're listening to this. That would be a very nice way to show your support of the work that I'm doing. Thanks so much. Take care, everyone.